Hello and welcome to Mapping the Zone, where we discuss large, dense books, typically. Usually the works and context of Thomas Pynchon, but not today. Today we will be answering an age-old question, a question that has plagued humanity for generations. It was first posed by DJ Snake and Little John, and it is turned down for what? We will be exploring what we should turn down for and what we should not turn down for, what it means to turn down, what it means to turn up, and everything related to that. No, we're going to be talking about M. John Harrison's Cappahoochee Tract trilogy, which consists of the novels Light, Nova Swing, and Empty Space, A Haunting. I'm going to give you all some biographical information about M. John Harrison. I know he's not super well known in America. A lot of, pretty much everyone I bring him up to, even people that are very into sci-fi, haven't heard of him. So M. John Harrison is British. He was born in 1945. He's technically part of the sci-fi new wave, although he's a little bit young. He's younger than a lot of new wave authors. He began publishing sci-fi stories in 1966. He pretty quickly became involved with Michael Moorcock's New Worlds magazine. Michael Moorcock is a pretty famous editor and writer. He's kind of bigger in fantasy than he is in sci-fi, but he writes some sci-fi. And Harrison began publishing novels in 1971. His first major works are the Viriconium sequence, which starts with the Pastel City. That book, those books are similar to Book of the New Sun by Gene Wolfe, and I think we're probably an inspiration for Book of the New Sun. And like Book of the New Sun, Harrison's Viriconium sequence was probably influenced by Jack Vance and Jack Vance's Dying Earth tetralogy, which is a mix of sci-fi and fantasy, and is, like I said, about the Dying Earth. I actually just started reading the Dying Earth tetralogy by Vance, and it's quite good. It's more fantasy than sci-fi, but I guess I was reading this. I guess D&D took a lot of their the rules about magic in D&D are stolen from Jack Vance, I guess, or largely inspired by Jack Vance. Anyways, so Harrison's first space opera was the Centauri device. It was kind of like the Cappahoochee Tract trilogy. It's a send-up of or parody of the space opera genre. So Harrison published two books about rock climbing in the mid to late 80s. Around that time, he said he was abandoning sci-fi, I guess probably in favor of a more literary fiction approach. That being said, Light, which is sci-fi and is a technically a is it's a space opera, but it's also a parody of the space opera genre, kind of like how Snow Crash is cyberpunk, but it makes fun of cyberpunk. Maybe be a good analogy there. So Light first appeared in 2002. It was the co-winner of the James Tiptree Jr. Award. Nova Swing came out in 2006. It won the Arthur C. Clarke Award and the Philip K. Dick Award. And then Empty Space, A Haunting came out in 2012. Harrison published The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again in 2020, I believe. Of the four books I've read by Harrison, that's probably his most Pynchonian. It's very English. It's kind of a pastoral in some ways. It features a conspiracy that has like fishmen and the reversal of the land and the sea. The conspiracy is very nebulous, kind of like how it is in a lot of Pynchon novels, where we get a lot of clues, a lot of hints, but nothing concrete. I could recommend. I would recommend that book, "The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again," pretty
You read
highly.
that
I
like
really
last
enjoyed it.
year, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So yeah, we'll get into the Cappahoochee Tract trilogy. So it begins with Light. Light features three storylines that may or may not converge by the end of the book. The first storyline is set in 1999, right on the verge of the new century, and it's about a guy named Michael Kearney, who's a theoretical physicist. He's also a serial killer who kills at the behest of a Schrander. A being called a Schrander. The Schrander is kind of a demon or something like that. And it's kind of unclear. I mean, the Schrander also shows up in the other two storylines and is maybe not quite as demonic in those. It takes the appearance of, I guess that's kind of a spoiler, so I won't get into it actually. But Michael Kearney is on the verge of a breakthrough with, I'm not big into physics, but I think it's something to do with quantum computing. That storyline has some cyberpunk elements where different corporations are vying to steal their Michael Kearney and his business partner's idea. Second storyline is about a woman named Syria Mao Genlicher, who's a pilot of a so-called K-ship, which is a highly advanced spaceship. She is in pretty much every way, literally like a part of the ship, and has been since the age of 13. She decided to do that, become a K-ship, basically, to run away from her family. And the description of how she became a K-ship is pretty haunting because they like strip organs from you and like hook up all the stuff to your brain. And I'm not describing it very well, but it's pretty haunting and gnarly and body horror-ish. And the third storyline is about Ed Chianese, who's a space adventurer who is infamous for his escapades around the Kafuchi Tract. Kafuchi Tract itself is an anomaly that is, quote, a singularity with no event horizon, end quote. Syria and Ed are also haunted by the seemingly demonic Schrander. And the Ed and Syria storylines happen around 2400 AD, so about 300 or 400 years in the future. Yeah, the Syria storyline, it's mostly just about her going around in her ship and the different people that she picks up and the different people she encounters. And the Ed storyline, he eventually turns into like a riff on Mormonism, and it's like a parody of the creation of Mormonism, because he sticks his head in like a box sort of thing, and then like prophesizes as part of a circus act. It's hard to distill the book into, it's hard to summarize the book because there's a lot of different subplots and a lot of different characters. And like I said, you know, the storylines, you kind of assume they're going to converge, and they may or may not actually do so. And then Nova Swing, the second novel, it centers around something called the Event Site, which is a piece of the Kafuchi Tract that fell onto a planet. The piece of the tract creates a sort of rather nebulous zone that is pretty similar to Area X from the Southern Reach trilogy. I would assume that Vandermeer has read Nova Swing, although as I'm about to get into, it's also very similar to The Zone and Roadside Picnic, which is more clear influence on Vandermeer. And like in Roadside Picnic, there's groups of people who journey into the event site to gather artifacts. The novel is mostly about a criminal named Vic Serotonin. Vic Serotonin is what's called a twink in the novel, which has nothing to do with the modern definition of a twink, because a twink in the world of Nova Swing is somebody that is obsessed with and spends most of their time in a sort of virtual reality. So he prefers virtual reality to real life. But Vic Serotonin leads tourist expeditions into the event site, and it's also about the policeman tasked with stopping him, whose name is Detective Ashman. It's A-S-C-H-E-M-A-N, however you want to pronounce that. So the detective is the head of, quote, site crime, end quote, and he's been genetically altered to look like Einstein and drives a restored 60s Cadillac convertible. The prose in Nova Swing is pretty next level. Some of the best I've ever encountered. It's some of my favorite prose. That being said, the book definitely places prose over plot, and the plot of the novel is pretty bare bones. The characters kind of drift around, and you know, the detective is investigating Vic, but there's also other stuff that he's doing. Like, he's also kind of investigating the death of his wife before the novel happened. And Vic doesn't seem very worried about the detective. The detective is often, you know, doing things completely unrelated to his investigation of Vic. It's also very clear that Vic is doing, and nobody ever stops him. You know, I don't it's all very nebulous and kind of hard to parse. That being said, the language is like super, super beautiful and is some of the best prose I've ever come across. And the third book is called Empty Space, A Haunting, like I said. There's a few different storylines. One follows Anna Kearney, who's Michael from Light's ex-wife. She is featured in Light some. Even though they're divorced, Anna and Michael, they still are in each other's lives, still hook up. Michael kind of treats her like an on-again, off-again girlfriend or something, where it seems to be like he'll go over to her house and it's just like assumed that she'll take him in and stuff. But Michael isn't around by the time of Empty Space. Yeah, so Anna, that storyline follows Anna. She just kind of navigates motherhood and existence in a futuristic England. The futuristic England, it's not super clear until the end, kind of the last part of the novel, what's different about this England or even when it's set. Because there are parts of it that seem to be set around time of like right now, like 2024, 2025. But I had to guess it's probably more in the 2030s. And it's not super futuristic, but there is some differences and there is some world building there with there's like mention of India occupying Pakistan and different stuff like that. So then a different storyline follows Fat Antoine, a guy named Fat Antoine, who is fat. Yeah, it's definitely the names are a little bit Pynchonian. The Fat Antoine, he was fat in Nova Swing, but he's no longer fat in Empty Space. We still call that. It follows him and his two girlfriends as they transport mysterious cargo around the Kafuchi Tract. They go to different planets and visit people and have, there's, some interpersonal conflict with them. And then another storyline is the investigation of a serial killer near the event site. It's not clear if there actually is a serial killer, and the bodies of the people that are killed by the serial killer like hang in the air and swing around, and eventually they just disappear altogether. It's semi-implied that like the event site is just kind of doing that on its own. The event site's growing and killing people and then setting their bodies just to kind of spin in the air and then disappear. Although there could be an actual killer, it's just not really clear. And another storyline is about a man named Rig, who's a sort of espionage agent. It's unclear if he works for a corporation or a government, but he is involved with like developing new technologies and stealing other people's technologies and stuff like that. But that storyline is centers around Rig discovering an Aleph in the tract. An Aleph is, I'm actually kind of, I think it's a Kabbalistic term. I want to say, I could be wrong about that. Boris talks about it.
The Hebrew alphabet.
Yeah, Boris talks about what an Aleph is. He has a book called The Aleph, and I do think it's, I do feel like Harrison has probably read some Borges. But, so the trilogy is kind of a loose trilogy, as I've kind of gone over, like some characters recur throughout. But you know, like Fat Antoine is kind of a side character in Nova Swing and then becomes a main character in Empty Space. Anna Kearney is a side character in Light goes to a main character in Empty Space. So it's looser as a trilogy. A lot of, I think Ed Chianese is mentioned some in Nova Swing and in Empty Space, but doesn't really appear as a point of view character. I don't necessarily think that the trilogy needs to be read in order of publication. The only caveat to that is the storyline following Anna Kearney in Empty Space will make a lot more sense if you've read Light. You could probably read Nova Swing on its own, to be honest. Light is probably in my top 10 of books ever. I really love Light. It's probably top 5 or 6 among novels I've read.
Okay.
Probably top 2 or 3 in terms of sci-fi novels. I really love Light. It's one of my favorite reading experiences of the last year. So I'll give you all a quote from Light. It's from page 181. So human beings hooked by the mystery of the Kafuchi Tract arrived on its doorstep 200 years after they got into space. They were errant newcomers, driven by the nouveau enthusiasms of a cowboy economy. They had no idea what they had come for or how to get it. They only knew they would. They had no idea how to comport themselves. They sensed there was money to be made. They dived right in. They started wars. They stunned into passivity five of the alien races they found in possession of the galaxy and fought the sixth, which they called the Nastic, out of a mistranslation of the Nastic's word for space, to a wary truce. After that, they fought one another. Behind all this bad behavior was an insecurity magnificent in scope, metaphysical in nature. Space was big, and the boys from Earth were awed despite themselves by the things they found there. But worse, their science was a mess. Every race they met on their way through the core had a star drive based on a different theory. All those theories worked, even when they ruled out one another's basic assumptions. You could travel between the stars, began to seem, by assuming anything. If your theory gave you a filmy space to work with, if you had to catch a wave, that didn't preclude some other engine running on a perfectly smooth Einsteinian surface from surfing the same tranche of empty space. It was even possible to build drives on the basis of superstring-style theories, which, despite their promise 400 years ago, had never really worked at all. So as you can see, that is kind of making fun of hard sci-fi, a little bit at least, and kind of parodying how self-serious a lot of space opera can be. It's maybe not the... I could probably have chosen a better quote from Light, but I read it like a year ago, and I didn't want to reread it. So I just kind of skimmed and found that quote. As I've already gone over, like, the prose and atmosphere of Nova Swing are really astounding and beautiful and ethereal. But it's a bit derivative, you know, of the books of Roadside Picnic, especially. It's a little bit too off-kilter for me, and the plot is too thin for me. And here, I have some quotes written down for Nova Swing. I wrote them down because, like Cody, I guess, I had an idea for a detective story, and I actually hadn't read all that much detective stuff, so I have like a little notebook where I have stuff about the detective story I've been working on. Actually, recently, I started it just this past week.
Nice.
Yeah, I have about 2,000 words already. This is going to be a short story. But so I have some quotes written down that are related to the detective and the detective genre, which the Nova Swing does play with some. They aren't necessarily the best quotes from the book, but they're the only ones I had written down. So the first one is, the true detective starts in the center of the maze. The crimes make their way through to him. Never forget, you uncover your own heart at the heart of it. The second quote is, uncertainty is all we have. It's our advantage. It's the virtue of the day. And the third quote is, this was never an investigation. It was a mess. That third quotation definitely kind of summarizes the book in a lot of ways, in that, you know, it's rather nebulous, hard to pin down what people's motivations are. And it's just kind of, it's not necessarily confusing. It's just a little bit too bare bones and stuff, the plot, for me. Then Empty Space, I probably liked it better than, Nova Swing, but it's not as good as Light, in my opinion. I have two quotes from Empty Space. This is from 87. The water lay in short serpentine reaches, black and shiny between willow and elder. The soft earth bank, stamped down by generations of ducks, was churned anew each morning by excitable Labrador dogs. Anna stood for what seemed a long time, like someone listening. Took off her shoes, tugged her white nightdress over her head, and, having bundled them together out of sight, waded into the river until she felt it push incessantly at her upper thighs. Oh dear, she thought, who swims alone at night? Dr. Alpert, who's her psychiatrist, would find it interesting. Marnie, who's her daughter, who, 7 years old, some scraps of sinewy brown nothing in a red swimsuit, had loved to be towed around in the river by her father, coming in late to meals all summer, would judge it irresponsible. Anna took one lurching step back towards the bank, then, changing her mind again, knelt down and launched forward, careful to keep the water out of her mouth. The river accepted her. It was warmer than she expected, the current amiable and slow. Midstream, a faint narrow track reflected the sky, but the shadows were bulky and like objects in themselves. She swam 50 yards slowly. After a further 30, turned on her back, then, arms out, feet together, allowed the stream to take her and float her along, past a line of poplars, between some darkened houses, through the village and out again. Windlesham, which is the name of the village, appeared drenched in starlight but condemned by its own pleasures. Litter and dog droppings, discarded paper or tissue, the bleak poached surf of the sports field with its goalposts as luminous as bone, a concrete culvert, a used condom hanging from a branch over the water, long gardens from which Anna heard quiet voices or loud bursts of music. Beyond that used space, out along reaches fringed with reeds and rushes, between long fields sloping shallowly up to woods, it was no longer the river she knew. The current strengthened. The water, its motives discernibly its own, moved darker and heavier between the banks. Anna wasn't being swept away, but she was certainly picking up speed, while the Moroccan air grew warmer still, and the night, clear and white to begin with, tinted itself a sourceless neon pink. Pink, then blue, then both, then neither, a color as faint and sourceless as neon seen a street or two away, as if the fields themselves were gently broadcasting it. It goes on from there. The part in that an empty space where she's swimming down the river is some of my favorite prose that I've come across in recent times. It's just really beautiful, beautifully done. And, you know, Anna's character is typically pretty, she's odd. You know, she's taking a swim in a river, getting naked and skinny dipping in a river. It's probably assume it's past midnight. But she does a lot of weird stuff throughout the novel. But that part is kind of one of the more cogent and more human parts of the novel. I really love the part where she swims that I could have continued on for a while. But anyway, the second quote I have is from page 155. When the Capahuchi track expanded and what came to be known as the event, parts of it fell to earth on planets all along the beach. Event sites appeared everywhere. Sometimes in deserts or polar ice fields or at the bottom of the sea, but often alongside the cities. They were assembly yards of the abnormal, zones where physics seemed to have forgotten its own rules, expanding into the real world via perimeter of fogs, hallucinations, half-glimpse movements. From inside could be heard confused laughter, big music, the sound of machinery. Something was being produced in there. Obsolete objects came fountaining out. They were highly energetic and abnormally scaled. Reins of enamel badges, cheap rings, wind-up plastic toys, nuts and bolts, cups and saucers, horses and carts, feathers, doves, and black lacquered boxes, conjurer's props the size of houses. They burst in the air above the roofline, then toppled back and vanished. A blueprint unfolded itself across the sky, then folded itself up again and faded away. No one minded these illusions, if illusions they were. But artifacts and inexplicable new technologies came out of the event sites, too, and sought a foothold on our side of things. Some of them are conscious and looked human. They wandered out into the cities and tried to become part of life. That was when things went wrong. EMC took an interest. Razor wire went up. The observation towers went up. Site crime and quarantine, known popularly as Quapo, became, for a time, the most powerful police forces in the Halo, second only to Earth Military Contracts itself. So yeah, overall, the trilogy is super rewarding, I would say. I got a lot out of it. It's also very difficult. Not super, super difficult. It's just kind of, as I've kind of gone over, there's a lot of different storylines going on. It can be hard to kind of pin down what the point of some of the information that's being transmitted to you is. There's also a lot of, and I, not from the quotes that I read so much, but in general in the series, there's a lot of, what's basically, and I think intentionally, techno babble, where words are smashed together, you know, kind of more physics, where like words that are typically used in physics or in science are kind of smashed together. It can be kind of hard to parse that kind of stuff sometimes. And if you're looking for literal meanings, in that technical babble, you're going to have a hard time. And I haven't read all that much of the space opera genre, so I'm pretty sure that at least some of the comedy of the series is lost on me, because I'm just not an expert in space operas. I've read a good amount of sci-fi, but not so much space operas. And to wrap everything around back around to Pynchon, I would say it's Pynchonian in that the prose is complicated and beautiful. You know, there's odd names, as we've already been over. There are always, in each of the books, even in Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again, there's conspiratorial elements. Also, Harrison plays with tropes from sci-fi and fantasy, and also from literary fiction, just like Pynchon does. And I would say the quality of the books is maybe not at Pynchon's level, but it's maybe like a rung below it, which is still very high praise coming from me, because Pynchon's kind of the pinnacle. You know, I did a bonus episode over Gene Wolfe, and Gene Wolfe and M. John Harrison are grouped in together some, just in terms of kind of their difficulty and how, and yet how, like, they're difficult, but they're also very rewarding to read. Yeah. So did y'all have any questions?
I actually stumbled across this book at by library like a month or two ago, I think. And I was really curious about it. I remember it was one that was, I was just walking through the sci-fi section, and it was at the end of the shelf. And so I could just see the cover, and that just kind of caught my attention. So I was reading the back of it, and it sounded really good. I ended up putting it on my to read list, but I think I'm going to have to bump it up after you're talking about how good it is. I think sci-fi and fantasy has the really interesting capability to examine parts of life in a way that regular fiction sometimes can't do, just in the sense that they can play more with creating a different world and kind of, you know, manipulating how things work in that world and how technology works, and use that in ways to kind of examine, you know, aspects of life or whatever it's doing. When it's at its best, part of what I love about sci-fi and fantasy is the prose, like you were mentioning. The prose being really strong in these books, and that's something I really like about it, especially when it's dealing with like the world building and you know, creating the images of the place in which the book is happening. So knowing now a lot more about this series than I did when I just threw it onto my to read list because the back sounded cool, I'm really way more excited to pick this up. I just checked actually while you were covering all of that, and it's the three copies that my library has are all on hold, so I have to wait for a little bit to get it, but hopefully that won't be too terribly long. I do wonder, though, without obviously diving into any spoilers, does it tell us what we should or should not turn down for?
No, it doesn't actually. It does not address turning down turning up.
I have to search elsewhere for the answer to that question. Okay. But no, it sounds great. I didn't even realize it was a trilogy until you mentioned that. So that makes it even more interesting. But yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you brought this up, because now I'm really excited to read it.
Yeah, sounds good.
What puts light into your top 10 books you've ever read, top 3 sci-fi you've ever read?
That's a good question. I mean, I think the prose from Empty Space I read is really good, in my opinion. The prose from the section I read from Light is probably not the strongest prose section of that book, and maybe not even representative. The quality of the prose of that book, but the prose is really good, but it's also like, it just had me like, I wasn't necessarily on the edge of my seat, but it had me just super interested in the different storylines. It's kind of confounding at times. Like you follow Michael around, and you know, he's just kind of living his life, you know, trying to build, I think it's a quantum computer. I think it has to do with quantum mechanics and stuff. And then he just kind of randomly meets up with somebody, and then he just randomly, like, the Schrander appears, and he kills people with the, you know, I don't know. It's hard to kind of, like, it's not necessarily, it doesn't scan as random, but it's just, it constantly surprises you. Mm-hmm. The world building is really exquisite, I would say, in terms of, it's just really well thought out, and like, it, especially the future storylines, it just kind of throws you in there and doesn't hold your hand. And it's just really high quality, I guess, is maybe the best way to summarize that. I couldn't really think of any flaws in the book, at least with Light. You know, I wasn't sitting there like poking any holes in it. I was just constantly like, wow, this is amazing throughout the whole book. The parts where Ed is prophesying as part of the circus, you know, it's just super absurd to picture somebody sticking their head in a box and shouting out predictions about the future in a circus set on a different planet 400 years in the future. It's just, it's absurd and it's fun and it's complicated. And I just really enjoyed it.
Where would you like, I guess, maybe I don't have a good way of like explaining this question. Or would you put it in like the science fiction canon? Like, you know, you can start out with science fiction with like Fahrenheit 451 or like 1984 or whatever, but then eventually there's like the more challenging science fiction novels later on down the road that you kind of get to, like your Dunes or your Hyperion or, you know, a bit more esoteric stuff. Would you put it more towards that end of kind of the stuff to read? Like, or does it, is it a bit more of an easier engaging read?
Yeah, it's not, it's the opposite of pulp in a lot of ways. So I would definitely put it more on the Dune, Hyperion, Book of the New Sun, like that end of the spectrum where it's more complicated. You have to pay attention. It's rewarding in the way that literary fiction can be rewarding, and that it's kind of an exploration of the human condition. While also being an exploration of a world 400 years in the future for 2/3 of it. I haven't read Hyperion. I do know some stuff about it. I don't think it's as literary as Hyperion is. It's not as kind of virtuosic or in-depth as Dune is, but you know, nothing is as virtuosic and in-depth as Dune is.
That's very true. I think you'd really like Hyperion in particular, Luke.
Yeah, I own the first two at least, and I've been meaning to get to them.
Yeah, definitely recommend.
Yeah, Hyperion is great. I need to go back and reread that. It's been a minute.
So you had mentioned that you thought that Nova Swing would probably work as a, not necessarily standalone, but as an introduction to this trilogy, or at the very least, you don't necessarily need to read Light before. But do you think that M. John Harrison, who apparently has been writing since like the mid-60s, do you think these are a good introduction to his work? Do you think that they benefit from having some background understanding of his previous work?
I think that these could be a good introduction to him. I mean, the only thing I'd read by him is The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again. And The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again is, I struggle with kind of classifying it in terms of genre, but I wouldn't call it sci-fi necessarily. And I don't feel like The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again is probably the best introduction to his work. I feel like Light is probably a better one, or even Nova Swing. I wouldn't start with Empty Space either, but I do think that Light or Nova Swing is probably, of the books I've read, going to be his best introduction. The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again is kind of more a book that I think you're either going to love or hate. And I do know that, you know, reactions to Light, looking at stuff on Reddit and stuff on Goodreads, is a bit more, all three of the books don't have like super high ratings on Goodreads. And I have seen some stuff of people not liking those books, but the complaints seem to be mostly be that it's too complicated or difficult, where people are kind of going in expecting a more normal space opera type story, or a more normal sci-fi story, and we're instead kind of slapped in the face with how absurd and out there the world is.
I feel like anyone who's even something called space opera shouldn't be allowed to have that particular critique of something.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know, and I do know that I do know that his Viraconium sequence is pretty beloved. And that's definitely earlier in his, it would be an introduction to kind of his earlier stuff. I have heard that the first book in the Viraconium sequence isn't as strong as what follows. I'm not 100% that even the Viraconium sequence, if you start at the beginning, would be the best introduction. But if I were to start with him, I'd probably start with Light.
Okay, thanks. It is interesting that, you know, in general, his books are not well received, because I just happen to have seen people talk about Nova Swing a lot recently for some reason, and they've all been like incredibly effusively positive about it. So that's fine.
I think because I saw the same thing on Storygraph, I think what it is, I've noticed this, especially in the sci-fi fantasy genre, there's always a subset of fans that are, they operate in this sort of binary of it's either really good or it's absolute garbage. There's no in between. And there's a tendency, I think, within the community to focus on authors that are established and that they like, and they will upvote those authors or rate them higher only because it's that author, and anything that's not that will get trashed and kind of brought down. Not necessarily review bombing, but kind of similar to that. So I think maybe that could have something to do with it, because like we said, it is a more challenging read. And a lot of, if there's people in that community that don't want something that's challenging, they just want a straightforward space opera or a straightforward, you know, fantasy story that has to kind of be on rails to a certain degree. And if it's not that, they will automatically just dismiss it. And that kind of becomes this cascading thing where a bunch of them will do that. I think that might be the case with this. It may be a little bit too cerebral right now. And I think maybe in time you'll have a situation like with, you know, like with Gene Wolfe stuff, where people will come around to see it and be like, okay, yeah, it is challenging, and it is, it does require more from the reader, but it is incredibly rewarding as a result. So time may be kinder to it than it, you know, than it's being right now.
Yeah, and M. John Harrison, it did, I think, in the 90s, receive an award for like his contributions to the sci-fi genre, and the award specifically for people who had contributed a lot to the sci-fi genre but hadn't experienced a lot of commercial success. I don't think M. John Harrison has ever really sold all that well. Where I have found his books in used bookstores some, but you know, he's not as ubiquitous as a lot of other people. All right, so that does it for this episode of Mapping the Zone. Thank you for joining us. I'm Luke. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.